The Speaker of the House of Representatives has been removed from his position, first time ever in the history of the country. And wow, it was a show. Let's start there. Open question to the group. Was this a good day or a bad day for the GOP? Good day or bad day for Matt Gaetz, for the country? What do y'all think?
I just don't know what good and bad is anymore. You know, they putting on a show. I'll tell you that. We are entertained. We are taken aback. It's given theater. This is peak theater, if I've ever seen it. And I'm blown away. I didn't think Matt Gaetz was going to be able to do it. But I guess my question is, where do y'all want to go from here? Y'all just not going to have a speaker? Like, what's the plan? And was it that serious to remove him? I'm just watching and getting my popcorn. I'm sipping my wine and I'm just seeing how it's all going to go down.
A drama critic, like purely as an act of theater, what'd you think? I mean, 4 stars, 3 stars, star and a half?
I'm going to give that 5 stars. And Imani stole the words right out of my mouth. That was a wonderful performance on Matt Gaetz's part. The only thing that could have made that better is if we had like a swelling John Williams style soundtrack behind it, just to add to the flavor that he put on that. All those words that he probably doesn't really mean, because this was theater. This reminds me of that Russell Crowe gif as the gladiator. Are you not entertained? That's what we're seeing here. It's not going to make a difference. I know McCarthy has not been popular among the more conservative wing of the Republican Party for a long time. So this was a long time coming. Is it going to make a difference? No. I mean, they're going to have somebody new in there next week. I think they're going to have the forum next Tuesday and hold the election on next Wednesday. But realistically, I mean, this doesn't move the needle. It just keeps us entertained and distracted, just like a gladiator show.
Oh, goodness. Andrew, I'm going to leave the theater criticism to Jeff and Imani, and I'm going to go right to the dysfunction. I mean, what a mess. And yes, bad for Republicans, bad for America, bad for those of us who count on the Congress to do things that matter. I mean, let's just quickly review. You have 8 extreme MAGA members of what is already a very, very conservative organization, the GOP Conference in Congress, hijacking the group at the disagreement of like 95% of the others, throwing out a weasel. I mean, don't expect me to say anything nice about McCarthy, but doing it over the fact that didn't let the government shut down. These people don't want to govern. They don't want to make a deal. Governing requires some time to deal with people different from yourself. And this is a symptom of a big, big problem that isn't anywhere close to being solved.
Not at all. I feel like how they say in the Christian community, you'll appreciate this, Andrew, each and every day we stray further from the Lord. Okay. And that's how I feel in this situation. Each and every day we get further and further away from what government is actually supposed to do. We haven't accomplished any real thing, and we are no close to accomplishing any real things. They have this majority now in the Congress. And what are they doing with it? Trying to impeach Biden. Just doing a lot of foolery. And it's like, what are y'all here to do? Like, what is the goal for your constituents that you're trying to achieve other than making some zingers and getting some good points in and getting your little personal beef out with each other? That's all it is.
Let me push back a little bit. Yeah, go ahead, Jeff. I can wait. I got my powder's dry. Go ahead, bro.
Yeah, I have a feeling I might say what you're thinking, Andrew. But here's the thing. Like, yeah, the Republicans are engaged in all kinds of tomfoolery with this whole thing. But I can't let y'all just lay it at the MAGA Republicans' feet. There were 8 Republicans who voted for it. Who else voted for it? It was Democrats.
We got nothing to do with it. We're standing by shaking our heads. Do whatever you want, boy.
No. The Democrat lawmakers voted for this. Matt Gaetz worked with Democrats to make this happen. If he wouldn't have done that, he wouldn't have had nearly enough votes to get McCarthy out. The vast majority of Republicans voted against the motion to vacate. So this is a bipartisan production of political theater. No. I mean, over 200 Democrats.
Let me stand up for the other side for a minute. Okay. Full disclosure. I live in Florida's 1st congressional district. Matt Gaetz is my congressman. Oh. He's a friend. I know him well. I've interviewed him dozens, hundreds of times. Okay. He is serious about the things that he believes in. He's not just a showman, but he is obviously a showman. He's not just a Twitter troll, but he's obviously also a Twitter troll. He knows how to work a room. He knows how to make a show, and he has hitched himself for the hip to former President Trump. Clearly, all of that is true. He keeps getting reelected by overwhelming margins in this district. The people here absolutely love him. And the people who hate him absolutely hate him. He's a very polarizing figure. I take him at his word. I think that he sincerely wants reform in the budget process. He wants single subject appropriations bills. He wants to fund the Department of Transportation on a separate vote from the Department of Energy, on a separate vote from the military, on a separate vote from the Department of State. He wants it all out there so that you can argue about the particular issues and not have this giant package of up down where you can hide your deals and hide your yeses and nos in an omnibus that, you know, nobody pays attention to because nobody's accountable for any of it. He wants 72 hours to read all the bills. They want, you know, separate amendment capabilities on things that have $100 million for an appropriation. He wants to debate about stuff. And yes, he's willing to make sides with the Democrats to oust McCarthy, who broke all of his promises on this stuff back in January. So I don't know where this goes, but I think there's probably a good 15% or more of Republicans who would have voted with him if they weren't terrified of the GOP apparatus and Kevin McCarthy. They would have gone with him if they thought he was going to win. They didn't think he was going to win, so they got up there and rallied the cause for their leader. I think he and the other seven have said, look, this is a chance for us to do something different. We can move in a different direction. We clearly have enough leverage to stop you if you keep doing this dumb stuff. Yeah, I got to use Democrats to get there, but I'm weirdly, mildly optimistic that this might actually produce a change in the House of Representatives.
Boy. To be fair, his agenda isn't bad. Like, because they do try to shove a bunch of nonsense in these bills. They all try to put a whole bunch of nothing in there, try to squeeze more money to all this stuff for no reason. So I agree with being able to vote on things line for line and account money for specific interests. I'm not mad at that. I just want to see that progress forward. And I'm not sure if it actually will. I just don't have any hope. Sorry, y'all. I'm hopeless a little bit. I don't know.
Well, let's look at the two big things that he did in recent memory, right, that he promoted and tried desperately to achieve. Because I think all those things, Andrew, you're talking about, I don't think he believes any of that stuff. That's a pretend. The two big things.
But again, just as a you versus me, like, I know Matt really well.
I watch Matt really closely.
Okay.
I think you're in some kind of crazy Florida fever down there. I don't know what it is, but let's look at what he tried to do. He tried to shut down the government, right? Seemed perfectly happy to shut down the government. He seemed to want to shut down the government and finally was stopped at the 11th.
But it didn't get shut down, right?
He finally got stopped at the final minute by more adult heads prevailed. Let's just say that. And the other thing he wanted to do was the default on America's debt. Those are the two big things this year that were on his agenda. Thank goodness. A few grown-ups stepped forward and prevented both of those things, because those are terrible, terrible things, aren't they?
Isn't $33 trillion terrible?
Really terrible.
Isn't that enough to make us want to do something fundamentally different?
Well, but if they hurt, I mean, let's go negotiate. Let's make some deals. It's the two parties in this country. The most extreme members of one party shouldn't get 100% of what they want. In fact, most Republicans agree. It's the Republicans who really want to kill the guy right now.
Yeah, but that's the thing. I mean, Andrew listed off the things that Matt Gaetz wants. I agree with most of it. But the thing is, a lot of Republican lawmakers will say they agree with that. But do they do any action on it? No. I mean, like I said, he had to go to Democrats to get this done. So that says something about the Republican Party. Like, they say one thing on the campaign trail, they get elected, and then they do the exact opposite. And I think that's where a lot of this frustration comes from. Whether ousting McCarthy was right or wrong, that is where it's coming from. And again, it's not going to make a difference, because whoever they replace him with, the GOP apparatus is still going to ensure that things stay the same. But this just reflects the frustration that a lot of people feel. I think a lot of people on the left feel this frustration.
Agree,
as well.
Yeah. And my thing is, why do we always wait until the government shutdown is about to happen for us to start like talking about these issues? I think that's what I'm the most annoyed with, because I swear every few months, oh my God, the government's about to shut down. If we don't do all this stuff right now, there is no government anymore. Ah, and it's like, y'all had all year. Y'all had months and months and months to meet, to talk. What do y'all do down there all day, every day, if not get this stuff in order to prepare for this budget that y'all know is coming up? It always comes up. It happens every few months or every 6 months, whatever the timeline of it is, you know it's going to happen. So I just think that people use the sense of urgency to, yes, squeeze a lot of nonsense in these bills and get a lot done, just to use the fact that, oh, we don't want the government to shut down. But I feel like if we all really wanted to do this stuff line by line, we have nothing but the time to do it. There's plenty of people who allegedly support that type of decision making. Everybody knows that they have to pass this budget anyway. So I just think it's more of a symptom of how dysfunctional the Congress is as a whole, because they always wait to the last second to try to do anything.
That's what Matt was saying all throughout this, is this process of up against the wall, up against Christmas, up against the deadline, crisis and scaremongering that produces in the end the result that they wanted anyway. That's not a bug in the system. That's the system. That's a feature. That's what's by design. And so how do you fix that? Well, again, you know, the reforms that he's been pushing for a long time, and certainly ever since the 15 vote craziness of January. Hey, do us a deal. Make us these promises and we'll let you be speaker. He blew those promises. We'll find another speaker.
I want to throw something else in here, though. I mean, you know, when these people get into office, they don't do what they say they're going to do. Whose fault is that, really? I mean, when Kevin McCarthy became speaker, he had like 59% support among Republicans. And I would suspect that if they did the polling today, he would still enjoy a lot of support among Republican voters. So do voters really even want a lot of the things that Matt Gaetz is talking about? I mean, we can talk about, you know, going line by line and having single issue bills, but I don't think the rest of the nation really wants that as bad as they might say they do.
And that's the problem, right? They should want it. There's so many things
good in all of this. You know who looks good in all of this? Ooh. Nancy Pelosi, right? She had exactly the same narrow margin when she was running the Congress. Democrats didn't do any of that stuff. But Democrats love to fight with each other. I mean, we have a history of being nasty to each other. But bills got passed. Everybody got along. Some people grumbled about the squad, but in the end, they all lined up. She retained her speakership throughout the whole time. And boy, that's the sad result, I think, for Republicans, is that the result of this is that most Americans are going to look at this and say, these people are idiots. They can't get their act together. Let's get some people back in there who know how to run the joint.
You know, one of the things that, again, as a Floridian, I'm more familiar with this, but not specifically about Matt, but about how we do budgets in Florida. I'm sure other states do it similarly, many of them. But we have line item veto for the governor. So you pass, you know, the budget is, you know, tens of billions of dollars. And the governor goes in and says, no, line by line, wherever he wants to do that. And as a result, pork gets eliminated. You know, sometimes it's painful pork gets eliminated, but a lot of pork gets eliminated that way. And we're not going to get a line item veto power for the president in, you know, unless you get a constitutional amendment, most likely. But I suspect that part of what Matt's pushing for on all this is, you know, let's clump these things together and at least do something in that direction. Because if you have individual debate on the Department of Transportation or Education, you're going to get a very different package of spending than if you put it all together and everybody's, I'll trade you this for I'll trade you that. It's something in that direction. It's some kind of reform, in my opinion.
It's not a bad idea. It's just a matter of are they actually going to work towards getting this done and making this a reality? But I hear the benefits of it. I think we might actually get a lot more accomplished if we actually started going into Congress and making specific proposals for specific things for Americans. But I don't know if that's going to actually happen or if this is just going to be more, you know, more foolery, more things to entertain us. And then once the tension and the excitement of everything goes down, it just goes back to business as usual.
Yeah, unfortunately, I could be more white pilled on this, but that's exactly what's going to happen. We're going to forget about this in about 15 minutes, and then it's going to be back to business.
7 minutes.
Yep. And then, you know, but people are going to still complain about it, but it's not like they're going to elect people who are actually going to do something about it. I mean, in a lot of ways they get fooled because these people lie, and then they get in the office and then they show their true colors, then they still get elected again. So again, how much of this is our fault?
There's obviously an audience for this. And I mean, Andrew reflects that, I suppose. And, you know, as long as the.
Hey, you were watching too, brother. Come on.
But I mean, no, I love watching it as theater. Although I have to say, as someone who is, you know, more on the opposition side of this, I'm like, let me just stand back, let them do their circular firing squad, and then I'll come when they're all lying there bloody on the floor.
Let me use an analogy that I don't know. It caught my attention today. Which is, you remember the Bud Light protest, the ongoing Bud Light protest, right? Oh. Dylan Mulvaney, a minor player and a minor element of a weird marketing gimmick that Bud Light engaged in that has cost them God knows how much money at this point, right? I thought the boycott was misguided. We've even talked about that on the show. It's overblown. All the companies are pro-LGBT. It doesn't matter that you pick Bud Light on this, whatever. I thought it was a silly thing over a silly thing. And yet, it has had an effect, a major deterrent effect on companies who are now asking themselves, how much is this worth to us? Are we willing to consider the backlash we might get over this? It was misguided and silly and exaggerated, but it's produced an effect among companies. I think, again, playing the optimist, that if you can oust a speaker who won't follow his promises and will not do what the small enough majority to or minority to make a difference requires him to do to be fiscally responsible, we'll get rid of the next one. You didn't have that leverage. You didn't have that nuclear deterrent, so to speak, until yesterday, because nobody believed you could get rid of McCarthy. And then lo and behold, they did. And so the next time somebody says we're going to do it and the eight say, are you really? Better. And if you don't, we'll get rid of you. I mean, there's really a credible threat there towards getting leverage to getting something done.
You're a lot more optimistic than I am on that.
I think your prediction may be right, Andrew, but I think the results are terrible. I don't think the eight craziest people in the room ought to run the whole Congress.
The comfort of your favorite seat is now your comfy car selling command center, thanks to Carvana.
It doesn't get any better than this.
Your favorite seat's the best spot in the house. Make it even better by entering your license plate or VIN and getting a real offer in minutes.
There really is no place like home.
And speaking of home, Carvana will pick up your car from yours after you finalize your offer. Visit Carvana.com or download the app and sell your car from your comfy place.
I would like to take the next several minutes to bully Elon Musk. That is what we're going to do on this podcast.
This is
a pro-bullying podcast for the next few minutes. So I don't know if y'all
saw. No safe space for Twitter and X, is that right?
Yes. We're going to demolish him for the next few minutes. And I would love for y'all to join me in that. My final straw, which I've had several final straws for this man. I think he's a loser. But his latest thing is wearing his backwards cowboy hat down to the Texas border to just take selfies with like Border Patrol and go down there and think that he can give us some sort of criticism or leadership on border reform. I don't know what made him think that he has that authority or even an understanding of the concept enough to render his thoughts on the situation. But, you know, lo and behold, he went down there, did a failed live stream with his dying app X that didn't even work for him. And he went down there to just, I don't know what, position himself as a new political figure. What is Elon's goal? What is he doing here on this earth? And what does he want from us? Thoughts?
Well, one of the issues in life of mine, and I love everything you just said. I completely agree with it. I might even double down on some of it. One of the lessons that I have learned in life is that just because somebody's a genius in one area doesn't mean they know squat about some other area. Let's concede that the guy made a car that a lot of people like, and he sends some spaceships up in the air in a way that's effective. And PayPal, I use PayPal. So, I mean, I think all that's fine. But when
He digs really good holes.
I grant you that. All of that. But that doesn't mean he knows anything about the way the world works. Can I share a personal Elon experience?
Please.
So I wrote a book now, it's probably 2 years ago, with the kids who got stuck in the cave in Thailand. Against All Odds, it's called. It's a great book. Anybody ought to read it. It's on Amazon. And Elon got involved in that story. He showed up in Thailand where these young kids' soccer team was stuck in this cave for a couple of weeks. And he wanted publicity, and he wanted to be at the center of the attention. And he had the dumbest, rudest, stupidest idea. So first he said he was going to send a little submarine in to get him. Now, all the people realized immediately that there was no way his little submarine was going to get through the tiny cracks and crevices of that cave. If we waited around for Elon's submarine, those kids would end up starving to death in there. When one of the cave divers, the people who actually knew how to navigate, pointed that out, Elon's response was not to discuss it, not to debate it, but to call the guy a pedophile. So it was completely with no justification, no reason. It was a British guy living in Thailand. He figured he must be doing something bad with little girls. The guy was a skank. He was a low rent dope. And you know what? Buy his car if you want to, ride on his rockets if you like, but do not take any public policy advice from that fella.
Your observation about, you know, the overblown confidence that people get from massive success in one area not translating into justified confidence that they know anything about another area. People who are the best at delivering scripted lines on film for millions of dollars a year show up on late night TV shows and say the dumbest things that you can possibly imagine about politics and the world, because somehow they think that all of this attention and stardom makes them smart about the way things actually function. So I completely agree with the criticism. And anytime people are, you know, very effective at one thing, they ego blows them in the other direction. I can solve every problem that there possibly is. And sometimes you learn that, you know, you might be great as an engineer, terrible as a cook. And that's just the way of the world.
Okay, I'm struggling to
Don't do it. You'll feel bad if you do it.
Yeah. No,
I am struggling to figure out what Elon Musk did wrong. Let's get the facts. He went down to the border. He wore his cowboy hat backwards. He did a live stream. He talked to some officials, took some pictures, and then went back home, and people are mad about it. I mean, I think that there are much worse things going on in the world than Elon Musk going down to talk about the border. As far as I know, I don't think he gave any policy prescriptions. I don't even think he held himself up like that. But any of us could do that. If I wanted to go to the border and do a live stream, I can do that. And nobody would get mad at me for it. Why is it so wrong when Elon Musk does it? It's a serious issue. The border crisis, regardless of what side of immigration you land on, that is a serious problem. He has 4 million people following him on Twitter/X. Yeah, getting more awareness about the severity of that situation. I don't see why anybody would be angry at that. I mean, unless there's something I'm missing here.
I think Elon is just thirsty. Okay. I don't think he cares about
maybe
the board.
He is, but
I
so
think
what?
He just wants attention. And that's the thing. It's like you had all this money. You are truly a billionaire, one of the richest men in the world, and you still are searching for happiness and attention in other ways. I think he's trying to create some sort of right wing pivot to maybe run for office or something. God forbid. God forbid. But I believe that's something that he may be trying to position himself to do. And it's just like, babe, you have a little bit too much dip on your chip. Enjoy your billions. Kick your feet up. Go to one of your islands. Go out of space to the moon. Go chill on Saturn. Do all of that stuff. But why are you trying to enter the political space? I think that's really what irritates me the most about it. It's like, you, sir, you want to throw your hat into this ring as well? Don't we got enough nonsense in this space? We don't need you in here as well.
Be a county commissioner and try to repair potholes and flood water and get yelled at by constituents every day. That would be entertainingly and humbling for him, I think.
You know, I'm just going to say it. And every single person listening to this knows that I'm right, but most won't admit it. If Elon Musk were more on the left politically and if he advocated for more leftist politics, nobody would have a problem with him doing these stunts. I'm just saying they wouldn't. I think this is a more of a political response to something he's doing because, yeah, he has been leaning more right, although I wouldn't call him a conservative, maybe more of a populist moderate type. But I think that's really why people are angry. I mean, if he went down the border and said, oh, it's not that bad down here, nobody would care. I think much of this is political. And I will even say people are supporting him doing this because of the politics, people on the right. So, I mean, I think that that's what's going on here. But all in all, I don't see that he really did anything wrong.
I think you're right about the tribalism. I mean, that is true. People do line up left and right, depending on, who's on which team. But there is a little context here. I mean, it's not the first time the guy has shown up to try and just grab a stupid photo op on some subject he knows nothing about. And has really nothing to contribute other than the fact that when he goes, cameras show up to watch him and he gets to do another one of his live feeds on X. Did you look at it, by the way? It was just badly.
It was terrible. It was the most worthless video.
Not since he talked to DeSantis on his opening day has there been a worst produced podcast.
It was worse than DeSantis?
No, that's what I thought about this video. This is a gag, right? Because he goes to the border to show us what's going on at the border, and all he shows us is himself and a couple of border agents. It was like the very thing that I was anticipating seeing. I don't know, people swimming, people walking, people cutting barbed wire, mm-hmm. people throwing backpacks up over the wall. I don't know what I expected, but I didn't expect ho-hum B-roll of
is this
Elon
thing
Musk
on?
With border
is this
agents.
Thing on?
Right.
Yeah, he had
exactly.
to send a mass email to the whole nothing. Staff. Literally, he sent a mass email. This happened to the whole staff at X. He just clicked reply all to the whole staff at the company and was like, my live stream not working. And it's like, bruh, Why are you even doing this? Go home.
Yeah, that's pretty embarrassing.
Good endorsement for the value of editors who come in and fix your product. You know, maybe the live stream isn't all that it's cracked up to be, because you could have maybe shortened it a little bit or just found something that was worth watching. Yeah, that was my thing. Is like, I literally thought, oh, what am I going to see on this video? Nothing. Nothing of any value whatsoever. So that was, to me, the failure was he went to go show us worthless stuff. You know, that didn't aid any. I could, any nightly newscast shows me more interesting video of the border than what he did.
Literally. And with his amount of wealth, I mean, he could have hired like a camera crew to actually go down there and look into it. I mean, yeah, I could see that criticism. Definitely.
That's what I mean. It's just stop trying to do so much. Like, it's like you're ruining your own legacy. Like, we liked you. You did the car. You had your SpaceX. You had an air of mystery to you. And now it's like, oh, you're a loser for real. Like, wow. Money doesn't buy cool, folks.
So can I say this, though? His basic position on immigration is, he's right. Okay. His basic position is as much legal immigration as our society can handle and prohibit all the illegal immigration. I mean, you know, big wall, big door, right? That's the basic thing that he's arguing for. And I don't know how that connected with this particular stunt, but that position is eminently reasonable, right? We want as many people to come here and bless the economy with their hard work as we can endure. We want to cut down on the number of people that are going to deplete the social safety net or tax it as much as possible, and prohibit criminals and fentanyl traffickers and human traffickers and all of that. I think that's what America wants. I could be wrong, but I think that's what America wants. So if that's the position, and this pushes toward that end result, I don't see how it does. But if that's what he's doing, I mean, that's good.
But Andrew, you just made that case very well. The answer to illegal immigration is legal immigration. Now, my campaign is to try and get all those people who are screaming about illegal immigration to actually support some legal immigration, which so far, unlike you, most of them won't do.
But that's the thing. I mean, by and large, when we're talking about like regular people, whether they vote Republican, whether they vote Democrat, they basically feel the way Andrew does and the way Elon Musk does. And that's one of the reasons why I'm glad that Elon went to the border, because we've had Democratic administrations and regimes, Republican and bipartisan, and we have no real solutions to immigration reform and reforming our system to make it easier to come here legally. I mean, the reason people break the law is because we make it very difficult and we don't handle immigration very well in this country. So anything that further highlights that, I'm going to be all for it, even if it involves a backwards cowboy hat and bad quality live streaming. But I think most Americans are on the same page on this. Now, the fringes aren't. And unfortunately, the fringes are the ones who get the microphone.
Dominate the conversation.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I agree with that. I've seen AOC go to the board. My whole thing is this. What are we going there for? Like, I don't understand what going there and taking pictures does. Go write a bill, write a law, propose something. Like, we have been at a complete standstill legislatively on the issue of immigration. Like, there's nothing happening on the issue other than, like you're saying, people going down there and doing photo ops. So I guess that's really where my main irritation goes, because, yes, it's highlighting the issue, but we already know it's an issue. What are you doing to further the issue in a positive direction one way or the other? What really was the point other than clout and attention? But I do agree that there is something that needs to be done on this. And we all say that, but it's like, who's going to be the actual one to propose something? Because we haven't had anything since the Dreamers. I think that's probably the last thing we've done on it. Am I right?
Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Okay, guys, this is a pet peeve of mine. And I know you've heard me bang this before, but I have a perfect example today of how American kids have parents who will not leave them alone. Parents, these helicopter parents, some people call it, overprotective parents, overly engaged parents. We've talked about this in high school, on college campuses. Have you heard of CSS, Concierge Service for Students? So here's the deal. For $10,000 a year, now listen carefully, folks who have kids in college, for $10,000 a year, beyond whatever you're paying in tuition and all that other stuff, you can hire this company, and they will give you a stand-in mom to keep an eye on your kid and help them out with all the little unpleasantries of life in the real world. They'll do the kid's laundry. They'll cook for the kid. They'll help with the bed making and the appointment making and remind them to get up in the morning in time for class. All the things that you would hope that young people would be learning on their own when they go away from home and go away to college. Now you can actually hire a high-priced service to do that for you. Tammy,
what a country. How about that?
Tammy Kaimon is the name of the lady who does it. I think these kids need to major in adulting. Don't hire Tammy and make the damn kids set their own alarm clocks in the morning. Am I missing here? Is somebody going to be sympathetic for this? Is it as big an issue as I think? I think it represents everything that's wrong with parents and kids today.
See, the reason I love you, Ellis, is because you always bring these grumpy old man topics.
Hey, I can be a grumpy middle-aged man, can't I?
Well, no, you're not an old man. I'm just saying it's a grumpy old man topic.
Get off my lawn and take your cup with you.
You know, but I agree with you 100%. When I read that article, I was like, okay, so it's basically like a maid, like with some extras here and there. And you know, and I understand that this is probably for students from more well-to-do families. So I don't think that this is like a cultural shift because most students won't be able to afford this, right? But at the same time, for the individuals who are doing it, yeah, you're not really setting them up for success. I mean, if they don't cook for themselves, but then again, if they come from rich families, they may never need to learn how to cook or do their own laundry. Maybe they were never doing it in the first place. So maybe this is just an extension of that. And it's something that they don't have to worry about anyway. And they can just worry about getting elected to government and violating all of our rights.
Well, when the nanny was doing it for all of these years previously, this is just rent a nanny at a distance. That's all this is. Listen, you know, Ellis, you know, of course, I love the term helicopter parent, but I have a newer term. You ready for this? Gunship parents, right? This is like the AC-130 spooky version of the helicopter. This is with the ammunition to take out any target that threatens your kid. And even if that's themselves, right, they protect them from everything. They shelter them from everything. They do everything for them in the hopes that all of their 18 years of overparenting to begin with is not going to result in some squandered opportunity when you send them off to college. And of course, I am confident without even asking the question that all of us in this virtual room were allowed to budget for ourselves, struggle with the first car payments, work a job that didn't pay enough while we were trying to go to school, just make all of that stuff work. And that's why we learned. I learned how to cook for myself. I learned how to do laundry for myself. Those are essential skills. You know, even if I don't do all of them today, it's important to learn how to do that. I don't balance the checkbook. My wife does, but I know how to do it and I've done it for a long time. These kids are never going to learn that. But let me be the other side for just a second. Every sorority and every fraternity has a house mom. And the house mom facilitates things, helps things, reminds them, gently guides and nudges, doesn't necessarily do everything for them, but more kind of parents them in a way through this challenge of being on their own at school and dealing with all this stuff for the first time. Now, I don't know that the sororities and the fraternities house mom is a great thing, but that's what it reminded me of is you're basically, you know, my kid's not going Greek, so I'm going to go ahead and get him a rent-a-mom at a distance.
It's okay to have some advising, some guidance, some mentorship. But it is important that everybody learns how to fend for themselves, or we're going to create a society of very weak and fragile people who do not know how to do anything and who are ready to just give up when life doesn't go immediately their way. And that's going to be a negative tone to set. I feel like we're already starting to see some of that. And I'm just a millennial, but I can see it with you Gen Zers. I can tell. I can see the difference. And I don't want that to be continuous.
Here's my larger question on this thing. When did this start? Right. I mean, I know these parents, they're trying to do for their kids, right? I mean, they want to make sure their kids have every advantage, get a leg up, make sure they're getting a good good start in the world. But most of us were not raised this way. I mean, I guess what my parents did would be considered child abuse, neglecting us and not doing any of these things. But what's the instinct here? Because I swear to you, I think this is connected to the fact that there are so many kids in their 30s and 40s still living in mama's basement. But I want to know, why does this happen? What started it, and what can we do to reverse it? Any thoughts on that at all?
So there's a dear friend of mine, Lenore Scanese. She was the one who pioneered the term free range kids. I don't know if you're familiar with this concept, but it's the, you know, it started way back in the day with an article in the, I think it's the New York Times, about a mom who let her kid ride the subway on his own to get back home and to learn how to navigate that system. And she's been talking about this for, you know, two decades. And the idea being that we've somehow gotten ourselves so afraid of letting kids risk, get hurt, lose, be injured, all of that stuff, that as a result, it's like every little incremental choice we make, it's easy to justify that one little choice. But overall, all of those little choices add up to this pattern of, you know, bubble wrapping our kids and refusing to let them become adults and learn how to do anything for themselves and experience heartache and pain and loss and failure and that kind of stuff. Because I used to walk to school. Okay. Used to walk to school. When we were living far away from school, we rode the bus to school. You waited on the corner by yourself or with some friends, and then in the cold, and then you got on a bus, and maybe you got bullied. Maybe you didn't. You go to school, you navigate things like that. Okay. Most people don't ride buses anymore. The parents drive them to school and they drop them off and they pick them up. Well, that's a loss. That's a loss of freedom. That's a loss of experience. That's a loss of, you know, forming your self-identity and all of that. But every little decision is like that. And we've kind of collectively decided, okay, these are the right decisions. That's okay. You're not going to make a catastrophic mistake and get your kid kidnapped. And in the end, we got kids who, as you say, Ellis, stay in their parents' basement for till they're 35 or 40.
I think it's operating in a mode of fear, because as a victim of helicopter parenting, okay, my mom.
Oh, interesting.
Like,
did that help you? I want to hear about that.
It's not fun. It's not fun. I had no privacy. I couldn't make any decisions on my own. She used to even read my diary. There was nothing that I couldn't do that she wouldn't know about. And it's not fun, guys. Okay. It creates a lack of boundaries in your adulthood. You don't know how to tell people when to back off because you have this parent that's sitting on your neck 24/7. And then guess what? When you get a taste of freedom, you lose your mind. Okay. And then you have to find your way back to sanity and collect yourself and learn. And I feel like it makes you have to learn so many lessons later on. You have to see so many different concepts that you should have already like understood earlier, but your parents never gave you the opportunity to develop that thought process for yourself. So I think it does anything but just delay your child's development in certain aspects. Yes, it helped me like with school and stuff. I was like real smart. I made straight A's because my mama wouldn't, hey, I couldn't do nothing else. However, that like street smart type of stuff that you should get by just like existing in the world and as an adolescent navigating life, I didn't get to get that until I went to college. And I feel like that set me back a long time.
You know, I think what you guys are really touching on is a really deep issue. I mean, this is more than just like a funny story. I mean, this really represents an erosion of the independence of our later generations. I mean, when I was in school, I would, like you, Andrew, I'd walk to school, I'd ride my bike, I took the bus. I found out what happens when you miss the bus and, you know, when you have a harder time getting home, but I had to figure it out. I mean, in other ways too. And, you know, kids barely even play outside anymore and go on adventures and ride their bikes around town and play. And, you know, I think that this, you know, I think that we are sacrificing an independent spirit because of fear. And we're sacrificing that for a false sense of security, because everybody wants to protect their kids. There's nothing wrong with that. But at the same time, if you are coddling them or being a helicopter parent, you're actually doing more damage than good without even realizing it. It's one of those things where people have the best of intentions, but they're doing a lot of damage. And I think that is actually translating into a lot of other aspects of our society, where we will give up some independence to feel safe.
Interesting. Jeff, I think you're exactly right about that. Let me ask you this, though. I mean, part of it may be that we have gotten more savvy about the negative impacts of things like, say, childhood bullying, right? I mean, bullying was what we did in the schoolyard when I was growing up. I mean, that
that's just going to school. Bullying is just going to school.
Going to school and playing. But, you know, but some of it was probably destructive and some of it did mess kids up. And you know, it's appropriate to worry about that stuff as a parent, sure. I think. But maybe you're right. Maybe it's the good intentions just kind of get taken too far. Is that it, Andrew?
Well, and you raised, I think the right question is, okay, so when you were in school, you dealt with people who were mean, you dealt with people who were cruel, you dealt with people that you were maybe inclined to be mean and cruel to, and you learned what whether or not there were punishments, there weren't punishments. But nowadays, it's like all of that sort of ordinary, you know, cruel kid stuff, okay? It's not good, but it's good to learn how to handle that because when you become an adult, guess what? That's still people. They still behave this way. And if you don't learn how to handle that, navigate it, identify it, you know, work against it, you're going to continue to experience it. And that doesn't solve the problem. You know, there's not this eternal teacher's club that's going to protect you throughout your life from mean people. You have to learn how to handle that, or they're going to take advantage of you because you've never learned how to handle that. So it's kind of like the old inoculation thing, right? People who don't allow their kids to be exposed to bacteria and viruses and get dirt and all that, your immune system learns something from that. Same thing socially. If you protect them from everything, they never get social immunity of any kind.
It reminds me of a story that I read a few weeks ago. I actually wrote about it, where this school was implementing this program, this bias response program, where kids are encouraged to rat out their fellow students or teachers that they show some type of racial bias or what have you. And I'm reading this article and I'm remembering, you know, I got called the N-word a lot as a kid. I mean, I experienced a lot of racism when I was a kid and in LA and elsewhere. And to me, it's like it never would have even occurred to me to have a line to call somebody because somebody called me a mean name. Either we're going to duke it out or I call them a name or I ignore them. But I learned how to deal with that on my own. So to me, these are the things that make you stronger. And again, there has to be a balance, right? Because you do want to protect your kids, but at the same time, you don't want to set them up to be a weak person who can't handle the real world. Because in the real world, you're not going to be able to call somebody because somebody called you a name or what have you. And I think we are doing a big disservice to future generations.
I like the B word, Jeff, the balance, right? Because I don't want to have so many rules that nobody gets to be a kid. On the other hand, I don't want to give the green light to the biggest bully having people throw racial slurs at each other. I mean, I think we can all agree that's it is worth trying to stop that stuff. But I don't know. Bubble wrap kids. I think that may be the best expression here.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs. A gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
I came across a survey conducted by a political science professor at Suffolk Community College, and it had some very disturbing findings, especially for the future of our country. 90% of college students couldn't differentiate between the U.S. Constitution and the Russia Constitution. 90% of college students didn't know the difference between our Constitution and that of Russia's. To make matters worse, only one, and this is a different study, but only one out of six U.S. adults could name any branches of the government, at least one. Only one out of six could name any of them, not even all three. So, you know, when I read this study, one of the researchers asked a class of eighth graders why they weren't familiar with the Constitution, and they said, because we've never read it. Now, when I was a kid, I learned the Constitution. I wasn't like a constitutional scholar or anything like that, but they taught us about the First, Second Amendment, all the different amendments and the history between the Federalists, the Anti-Federalists, Declaration of Independence, all that good stuff. But if we're turning out a generation of people who do not know how our government works and also don't understand what natural rights they have and why they are worth defending, to me, that is absolutely terrifying. because that's going to be a population that is much easier to control, much easier to manipulate, a more compliant and ignorant generation. And this is only going to allow our government to become more tyrannical. How can you fight for your rights if you don't even know what they are? I got to get you guys' reaction to this.
I'm so glad you brought this up, because this is something that I've been noticing too, just as a society. And I don't think it's on accident. We are getting dumber. Like, people, there's like these skits where people walk up to people with microphones on the street and like, hey, can you name five states? And they're like, Chicago. And it's like, bruh, you're 30. Why don't you? That's crazy. And I think that the government has defunded like public education so much. And the people who make decision on allocating funds towards that stuff have just gotten it's basically gone. When I was a substitute teacher, I would go into classes and see textbooks from the year I was born. I was a teacher in 2019. So it's just crazy to see how underfunded these systems are and how people are walking around here without this basic knowledge. It's not being taught anymore. And there is kind of what I've seen lately is like a negative connotation between or towards people who do have an understanding of it. It's like, oh my God, you think you're so smart. And it's like, we should all want to be smart, because an educated electorate is the one that can make decisions in democracy. If you're uneducated and you're just kind of floating through life, just doing stuff without understanding the context or why these things matter, then yeah, it's exactly what you're saying. We're going to end up in a place where the people who vote don't even understand the concept of what it is that they're supposed to be doing with that power. And we're going to have people who are elected, which I feel like we already having that happen. People who are elected for the wrong reasons or for no reason at all, because people are so either not understanding of the system or so apathetic towards it that they don't care.
You're here. Can I give a little tip to those kids who are having trouble telling the U.S. Constitution from the Russian Constitution? The Russian is the one that's written in Russian, okay?
It's easier.
It's not hard
easier
to tell, all right?
You know, I actually, when I saw this article, I actually read some of the Russian Constitution, because I had not. I was kind of curious what it says. And aside from the fact that when I'm reading it, I can't stop myself from reading it in my head in a Russian accent. I know that's not the way it's written, but that's the way I want to read it. It says, for example, fundamental human rights and freedoms are inalienable and shall be enjoyed by everyone since the day of birth. All people shall be equal before the law and court. Everyone shall have the right to life. No human shall, and I'm skipping around a lot, okay, but there's a lot of this in there. No one shall be subject to torture, violence, or other severe or humiliating treatment or punishment. No one may be subject to medical, scientific, and other experiments without voluntary consent. And it goes on and talks about personal rights and economic autonomy, and also a right to be taken care of if you don't have enough money to purchase housing and things like this. And when I was reading this, I was thinking, I bet the average person, if they did, sat down to read this, would think, well, that is pretty awesome. I wonder if I can just move to Russia and get all of that. And to me, part of the issue behind this question of the ignorance of the system, the ignorance of what our Constitution says, is the ignorance of why constitutions do or don't accomplish the things they say. None of us believe this is the reality of Russian life, right? We believe that it's pretty unpleasant. And what's the difference? Like, not to be, okay, Jeff, you're going to hate me for saying this, but here's my thought. We live in a system and we are the beneficiaries of that system, even if we don't understand it. I don't know how microprocessors work or Wi-Fi works, but I get the benefit of using my phone. And the dolt who doesn't understand the three branches of government or the Bill of Rights or Supreme Court precedent, or even that there is a Supreme Court, still, as long as there's enough people like Ellis and Jeff and Imani and Andrew around kind of fighting for the right things, they get the benefit of the system. Does everybody need to know the Constitution in a theoretical world where I'm an educator, I love that stuff? Yeah, that'd be great. But this system, I don't know, people still benefit from it, even if they don't understand it or understand the difference between our Constitution and the Russian Constitution.
See, and I agree with that on one level, but I think like the paranoid libertarian anti-government part of me is saying, you know,
that's all of you, by the way. That's not the part.
Okay, yeah, that's all of me. But to be fair, yes, it is. But here's the thing, though. Yeah, they do enjoy the benefits of this system. Yeah, I would like to kind of keep it that way, right? I mean, that can easily.
Agreed.
one generation away, right? I mean, that can easily be usurped. I mean, we've seen totalitarian regimes come up. We've seen, and maybe we won't have a strongman dictator in America, but maybe we have a more expansive government that intrudes more in our lives. I mean, and I understand the Constitution isn't some magical document. I mean, we had slavery while the Constitution wasn't in effect, right? But understanding the founding of our country and what the limits on government are supposed to be, I think everybody should have at least a basic understanding, because that way they'll know when the government is overstepping its boundaries instead of just being compliant and just saying, oh, well, I guess they're just able to do that. I mean, there's so much horrible stuff that our governments do, state, local, and federal, and a lot of us don't even know about it because we don't even know that they shouldn't be doing it. So to me, it's very, very disturbing. It reminds me, there was this survey that came out a while ago, 30% of people under the age of 30 would be okay with the government installing cameras in their homes to protect them from domestic violence and other types of crime. Yet y'all don't know anything about the Fourth Amendment or the rest of the Constitution. That, see, to me, I don't think that we're there right now, but we could get there, and we need to stop thinking that we can't.
Yeah. You know, there is a lot of dumb out there. I mean, there's no denying that. But Andrew, I'm glad you read that Russian Constitution. I never heard that before. I mean, I knew there was a Russian Constitution, but to make a confession, I had never read it. And frankly, it sounds great. I mean, it sounds right. Wonderful. But I guess the message it teaches is that no matter how wonderful your Constitution is, if your government is run by authoritarian thugs, mm-hmm. they're going to do what the hell they want to you. And maybe that's a lesson we should remember in America as well, that if you put, bullies in charge of your country, no piece of paper is going to stop them from beating up on you.
Exactly. Just like with a restraining order, there's people who get one and then they're like, anyway, this is just a piece of paper. That's the same thing with the Constitution. But I think it's also good for people to understand their history and the context of all of this stuff, because like we said, we can look at Russia and say, clearly they're not abiding by these rules. But even in the U.S., if you don't understand what got us here, or if you don't understand the temperature of the country, then yeah, history can easily start to repeat itself or worse. So that scares me.
I will never take a position against educating people, take a position against teaching people their governmental system. I believe in it. I try to do it as much as I can when I'm on the radio or in any other context. So despite my comments previously about, you know, it's all going to be okay, I'm with you, Jeff. Okay. People need to know this. In Florida, it's a requirement. You know, it's a robust requirement to graduate high school that you get knowledge of the Constitution. And I don't mean just, you know, you can identify the three branches of government. You have to learn Supreme Court cases that deal with significant precedents under the Constitution. I mean, it's pretty robust, right? So it is. There's exposure happening. Okay. At the same time, and again, not to be too defending of the status quo or whatever, but Imani, you said there's stupid everywhere, there's dumb everywhere. And, you know, Ella said the same thing. We in this like podcast, okay, we have a unique feature to us, I think, that is the paradox of smart people. Okay. Hear me out. This is not just self-congratulation. The paradox of smart people is we're always learning. We're always gaining information. We're always adapting. We're changing our views. We're getting new evidence. We're reading, right? And we love that. And we're getting older, and so we're getting experience. As a result, if you have a static norm, like an average of 43 for intelligence and knowledge in the community, and you're growing over time, you go from being a 40 to being a 50 to being a 60. Over time, the average looks worse to you because you get farther and farther from it. Even if it's getting a little better out there, it still looks like it's getting worse because you might be progressing more. So they're all getting stupider all the time is something that people have been saying since the founding, when they published the Federalist Papers in the newspaper, and people today in grad school can barely read them. The farmers of that day read them in the newspaper. So, you know, I know it's a lot of conflicting stuff, but I don't know. I'm very jaded about where people are. Yes. If you ask them what they know, they don't know anything. On the other hand, as a country, I think we're doing pretty well. And it always looks worse to people getting older and smarter.
I think we could be doing much better. There was another, I think it was like a poll or something. It was like this ranking that came out. And I wish I researched it before I came, but they were kind of ranking like where the U.S. sits amongst all of like the other big developed nations. Y'all, we are at the bottom. It was like out of the top 40, we were in like 37, 38. And in education, we were, again, very low in that list. So we used to be very smart. We used to take pride in being number one or at least in the top five. But there has definitely been something that's happened over like at least the past 10 or 15 years where we are just slowly getting lower and lower and lower as far as our education and infrastructure and really everything else. And I think what Jeff is talking about is kind of like a symptom of this bigger thing of us just kind of regressing as a country. Like there was a point in time where we were mighty America, number one, we're number one. And then it's kind of like we're trying to hang on to that, like that feeling, but it's like the data and the math is not adding up. We're not giving that anymore. And I think that's what needs to be addressed.
And my fear is more, again, about future generations. I mean, I've been traveling a lot, like especially in the South over the past year. I've been in a lot of rural areas. And the regular folks, they may not be legal scholars, but they know about the right to the freedom of expression, freedom of religion, Second Amendment, Fourth Amendment, all that stuff. They have a basic knowledge because we all learned it as kids. But if future generations aren't learning that, that's what's scary to me, because again, not everybody needs to be a legal scholar and know case law, but they should have at least a rudimentary understanding so that they know when the government is doing something that it shouldn't be doing. Our future generations aren't going to have that if this continues. And I'm glad to hear about Florida, Andrew. I didn't know that. I'm glad that they have that. But I mean, it's just we're in for some troublesome times if this continues.
I'm not sure that TikTok is doing a great job of communicating to 18 to 25 year olds the foundational systems and structures of our government. I might be just a little skeptical on that, but yeah, it's kind of, because I think about how do we learn this stuff? Like, how do we learn that you have the right to remain silent? You know, it took a court case, of course, right? Miranda took the court case, but how do you learn that? Well, you saw it on TV. Now, TV does a lot to get everything wrong, but that's something that people learn. You have the right to an attorney. How do you know that? Because I saw it on TV. So some of these norms are actually communicated through the incredibly messed up system of public education called media, you know, entertainment. It's not a great backstop for people failing to get it K-12, but every once in a while, pieces do percolate through. People believe in their rights. They're wrong about what they are and the shape of them, but they know they have them. And maybe, again, some of this stuff does get through to the popular consciousness.
Bring back civics class.
Amen.
Or at least you'll watch some NYPD Blue reruns. How about that? You might learn something.
Yeah, that's right. How you learn about your rights. But I can tell you, I mean, with the people that I've worked with across the country, people who are getting victimized by police and by the government, I will tell you, a lot of them do not know what their rights are. They may know about Miranda rights and stuff like that, like what you see on TV, but they don't really understand what police can and can't do. And to me, like I said, we're not there yet. But I mean, we are definitely quickly approaching a time where the majority of the population isn't going to understand how their government works and what it's supposed to do and what it's not supposed to do. So hopefully we can figure out a way to reverse that trend.